For the last 6 weeks, we've been spinning around this giant wheel. And around now, you might be getting frustrated with it. And that's kind of the point. So we've been spinning around the wheel, learning about driving out sin, about avoiding the downward spiral that we can get into, avoiding dragging others into that downward spiral. We've been talking about how God responds to our sin, how we may forget him, but he doesn't forget us. Remember that. We talked about where our deliverance actually comes from. No matter where it comes from the Lord. And we've talked about how to avoid ending up divided and deceived by forgetting where the strength that will save us really comes from. And you might be thinking, ugh, again, the wheel. I thought we'd maybe be in a new series by now or in a new month. But the whole point of this wheel is that, yes, it's frustrating. And you may feel like, yeah, I get the point. But the wheel is supposed to make you sick, right? And it's supposed to bring us to the place where we'll do anything to get off the wheel. That's the point. But we've got to learn, we've got more to learn from this wheel. So we're going to continue on in the book of Judges today. And this morning, I'm going to tell you the story of Samson and what happens when you give up your purpose in order to get some peace. And I know most of you know Samson's story. Today, I want to tell you the point of Samson's story. So turn to Judges chapter 13. And again, there's no way I'll be able to cover everything in Samson's story today, so there's some pieces I'll leave out. But I want to start in chapter 13 because this is where it begins, and this is where, again, we see the wheel start to happen again. So Judges chapter 13, you can follow along in the app, or you can watch up on the screen. This is what it says. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord. And so again, the Lord delivered them into the hands of the Philistines this time for 40 years. And every time it says for 40 years, what it's saying is for a generation. All right, just keep that in mind. So again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord, disobedience. Again, he sends discipline, this time in the form of the Philistines to oppress them for a whole generation. And then here, verse 2. A certain man named Zorah, named Manoah, from the clan of the Danites, had a wife who was childless, unable to give birth. The angel of the Lord appeared to her and said, "You are barren and childless, but you are going to become pregnant and give birth to a son. Now see to it that you drink no wine or other fermented drink, and that you do not eat anything unclean. You will become pregnant and have a son whose head is never to be touched by a razor, because the boy is to be a Nazarite, dedicated to God from the womb. He will take the lead in delivering Israel from the hands of the Philistines." Now, there are two really important differences in Samson's story here that we should notice right away. And one you might have picked up on. It says Israel disobeyed and did evil in the sight of the Lord, and he sent discipline. But you know what's missing? The distress. They didn't cry out to God. They did not cry. They don't ask God to deliver them. Right? That's missing here. And that's really important. Keep that in mind for later. The second thing to notice is how different Samson is from all the other judges who God went and found someone who was already born and alive and said, "Come here, I'm going to recruit you to do this for me and for God, my people." In this case, God grows a deliverer from scratch in a miraculous way that sounds a lot like Jesus' birth, right? And Samson is committed from birth to this Nazarite vow, which means basically a few things. He should never eat or drink any type of grape product, no alcohol, right? He is never to cut his hair, and he is never to touch anything that is dead. He's committed to serve God's purpose from the time he's born. That's the point. That's what Samson is. That's who he is. So those are two very important things to recognize here at the beginning. Now I'm going to fast forward to Samson is now grown up. He's a young man, and he's hanging out in this Philistine town, and he sees this Philistine girl who is just drop-dead gorgeous. His eyes pop out of his head, and he's like, "I must have her." And so he goes home and tells his mom and dad, "I found the woman for me. She's good in my eyes. I want her, get her for me." And his parents are like, "Oy vey, can't you find a good Jewish girl?" He's like, "Nope, she's the one, that's it." And they argue, but he will not relent. So his parents give in, and they go and make arrangements. And here's the thing they didn't know. Here's what his parents didn't know, is that God was using Samson's, in this case, what we'll see, weakness with women. To set up a scenario, to set up a situation where there would be conflict with the Philistines. That would set the stage for a conflict where God could raise his people up and empower them to drive the Philistines out, right? And let's take a moment to understand this again. We talked about it 6 weeks ago when we started, but let's make sure we're understanding this because a lot of you have been reading through all this in the Immerse book through this time we've been reading through these chapters, Joshua, Judges, and all of that. So let's understand what's going on here. The tribe of Dan, you can see they're kind of in red there above the Philistine land. They were supposed to take all of that land along the Mediterranean Sea that is marked as Philistine land. They're supposed to drive the Philistines out so that that land could be God's land. And here's, remember, let me remind you, not because it's Israel's land and God wants them to have it. It's God's land and God has a purpose for it. God wanted to establish Israel there and through Israel reveal to the world that was utterly confused about who God truly is. Through Israel to reveal to the world who he is. But they had to drive all these other nations out because they're worshiping fake gods that they had created and built out of gold and silver and wood and all kinds of things, right? They had built these things and they had this distorted view of who God is and of what the world is all about, what life's all about. So God wanted this land. The Philistines in particular worshiped a god they called Dagon, and they wouldn't leave the land. And Dan, instead of pushing forward and trusting God to empower them for his purpose, they kind of quit on it and settled for making peace with the Philistines. And then they started to become like the Philistines and all of Israel too and became no different. And that's what got God so upset with them, which is what set them off on the wheel again. And God allowed the Philistines to oppress Dan and all of Israel around them. And some of you might be wondering, well, wait a minute. If God lets the Philistines oppress Israel because Israel was being sinful, then aren't the Philistines off the hook, right? Why does God want to get them? I mean, he's the one who allowed them to oppress Israel. And here's the point. They're not off the hook. There is a very big difference between, and this is true for you and I too, so hear this. There's a very big difference between God using our sinful desires in order to accomplish his purposes and working alongside of God because we love and honor him. It's a very big difference. And we see that all throughout Scripture. God will use even our sinfulness to accomplish his purposes. But what he wants from us, what he calls us to, is to work alongside of him out of love and reverence for who he is. You don't obey God by accident. So even though the Philistines are accomplishing God's purpose right now, that doesn't mean that they're off the hook because what they're doing is still wrong. Oppressing God's people is still wrong. Behaving the way they behave is still wrong. Worshiping false and fake gods is still wrong. And now that a generation has gone by, that's how it started, right? A generation went by. God decides it's time to do something about the Philistines. Let's give this next generation a chance. That's what's happening here. And so That's the background, and Samson's parents don't know that, but that's why Samson just has to have this girl. So Samson's parents set up the wedding, and when they get there for the wedding, the Philistines give Samson 30 groomsmen to be with him and to be his guys, and Samson throws a big drinking party. Even though he's got a Nazarite vow he's supposed to be living under, he throws a big drinking party. And while they're all getting drunk, he decides, let's have some fun, and he proposes a bet, a wager with his 30 groomsmen. And he says, I've got a riddle I'm going to tell you, and if you can answer this riddle, I'll give you the full 7 days, because wedding ceremonies took a week, right? Imagine that, those of you who've recently gotten married or who are about to get married. It took a week. And so he said, I'm going to give you the full week to figure it out. If you can figure it out, I will buy every one of you, all 30 of you, a brand new set of clothing. But then he said, but if you can't figure it out, then every one of you has to buy me a brand new set of clothing. I mean, that was expensive for them back in those days. It's not like you go to Kohl's or Target or Walmart and just buy some cheap stuff. It was expensive. A set of clothing was expensive. And so he tells them the riddle, and here it is. I'll tell you. Some of you may remember it. Others of you, you're going to try and figure it out for a few seconds. He says, out of the eater something to eat, out of the strong, something sweet. Those of you who maybe have never heard this before, I'm sure you understand right away what that must be, right? So they can't figure it out. These 30 guys can't figure it out, and they're getting really annoyed. They're getting actually more than annoyed. They're getting angry, and they go to Samson's bride, to his wife, and they threaten her, and they say, if you don't find out what the answer to this riddle is, we're going to burn you and your whole family to death. Okay? So she goes in, and she's begging and pleading with Samson, please, please won't you tell me? Please don't you love me? Why wouldn't you share it with me? I'm your wife. You know, you've got to tell me these things and share this with me. Don't keep me in the dark. She begs and begs and begs and begs for days. And finally, on the last day, Samson relents. And he tells her that on one of his trips down to visit her, a young lion had come running out of the tall grass to attack him. And the Spirit of the Lord came on Samson, it says. And he caught that lion by its mouth and just ripped its jaws open like it was like a little baby lamb, like it was nothing. And he left it there dead. It's like, and then the next time I came down to visit you, I went to check on the carcass to see, you know, what, because all guys are curious to see what that's going to look like after a couple weeks, right? So he goes to the carcass and he finds bees had made a nest in there and they were making honey. So he stuck his hand in. Again, breaking his vow to never touch a dead thing, sticks his hand in and takes the honey out and eats it. And he's like, so that's what it's about. Out of the strong, out of the eater, something to eat. Out of the strong, something sweet. The eater's the lion. The something sweet's the honey. So he tells her. And you know what she does? She immediately runs to these 30 guys and tells them, here's what it is. And so they come to Samson and they tell him, well, Samson, it's like the last hour they have to give the answer. And they tell him, what is sweeter than honey? And what's stronger than a lion? And then Samson replies with what I think is one of the funniest lines you'll ever find in the Bible. And I'm desperate to find a way to work this into a conversation somewhere. He says, if you had not plowed with my heifer, you would not have solved my riddle. But the point is, this is what God was orchestrating with a reason. God wanted there to be conflict between the deliverer he had grown from birth and the enemy of God's people. And so watch what happens next. Again, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon Samson, just like the Spirit of the Lord had with the lion. And Samson goes down to this place called Ashkelon, which is one of the five capitals of the Philistines. And he kills 30 men from that city, takes their clothing, brings it back up to the wedding, and gives it to the 30 groomsmen. And then he's just angry and he storms back home with his parents and leaves his wife behind. Days go by, weeks even. And Samson gets up one day and says, you know what? I want to go sleep with my wife. So he takes a gift and he heads down to his wife's father's house and he gets there and her father won't let him in. And he's like, "What? I want to go sleep with my wife." And his father says, no, I'm sorry, Samson, but I thought you hated her, so I gave her to one of the groomsmen. Well, now Samson's really upset, and he says, this time I've got a really good reason to hurt the Philistines. And so he goes out and does one of the craziest things I've ever heard in my life. He catches 300 foxes, and he ties their tails together in pairs, takes them to the grain fields of the Philistines, lights their tails on fire, and sets them free to run around, and they set fire to all of the crops of the Philistines. And now the Philistines are mad because of what he's done. And so they do the next logical thing to do when someone does that to you. They go and they take his wife and her father and they burn them to death. And then Samson goes in anger and in the power of the Lord, though, and kills a whole bunch of Philistines. And then runs into Judah, which is that land right along that eastern border of where the Philistines lived, and goes into a cave there to rest and be refreshed. Now, Judah was the tribe of Israel. That was one of the largest. They were the ones that were to go first into battles, right? They were strong. They were mighty warriors. And so he goes into Judah and he goes into a cave there to just rest and recuperate and relax. And the Philistines find out he's there and they gather their army and they go up to the border of Judah and they camp out and spread out all along that border. And the people of Judah, the leaders of Judah, come out and say, "Why are you here to fight us?" And the Philistines say, "We're here for Samson." Now, this is the pivotal moment, right? What should happen here? Remember, God has been orchestrating this. God had a purpose for this. He wanted Israel to rise up and shake off the Philistine oppression. And he would empower them to do that if they would just, instead of settling for a cheap peace, live for his purpose. That's what's supposed to happen. And he's worked it out perfectly. He brings the Philistine army right up to the border of the tribe that's always supposed to lead the way in battle. It's a perfect setup for a confrontation. He's given Israel a deliverer who's more powerful than any deliverer they've ever known and brought the enemy to the doorstep. And all that's left for them to do is just fulfill their purpose for which God has always given them power. But they don't. They don't. Instead, listen to what they say and do. Judah takes 3,000 fighting men, and they don't go up to the Philistines. They go find Samson, and they drag him. Well, they call him out of the cave. They're nervous about him. And they're like, "What are you doing?" they say. And Samson tells them, "Well, I just did to them what they did to me." And then this is what they tell Samson, and it's tragic. They tell him, "Don't you realize that the Philistines rule over us? What have you done to us? Don't you realize the Philistines rule over us?" Now, wait a minute. This is supposed to be the climactic clash between God's people and the people of chaos, but there's no clash because Israel gave up her purpose in order to have a little bit of peace with the Philistines. And then they ended up oppressed by the Philistines. They never cried out to God. And so they gave up their purpose and they lost all their strength, all of God's empowerment. They accepted the Philistine oppression as the price they had to pay for just a little bit of peace. "Don't you realize the Philistines rule over us?" Not God. Not God. "No, the Philistines rule over us now. And we get peace from them." When you give up your purpose to get cheap peace, that peace becomes a prison. That's the reality. God had a peace for them, but it required driving out of that land all those other influences. No more idolizing and ritualizing sex. No more temple prostitutes and all that nonsense. No more mistreating the poor. No more abuse and violence and hatred and injustice. No more senseless sacrifices to gods who didn't care. All these nations have the wrong ideas about God, and God is saying no more to that. But in order to set that straight, God needed a people who would be purely his and live for his purpose. And he said he would empower them, uniquely empower them to be that, if they would just obey and follow him. But living for that purpose would mean conflict. And it would be very easy at times, like they did there, to look at an army like the Philistine army and say, "That's too much. I can't overcome this." Right? "God, I see your purpose. I hear what you're saying, but that's too much for us. So we're just going to sue for peace and accept the fact that that becomes a prison for us." That's the place is the entire nation of Israel's in here. They've gave up God's purpose in order to get some peace, and that peace then became a prison. That's how peace becomes a prison. When you give up your purpose to get peace, the peace becomes a prison. Do you see that in your life? Think about that for your life as we keep going with the story. When you give up your purpose to get a little bit of peace, that peace will turn into a prison. And here at the beginning of this new generation, God's giving them a chance to rise up. Will you rise up and fulfill your purpose again? But instead, they tie Samson up And he tells him, look, tie me up, that's fine. Just don't you kill me. Tie me up and bring me to the Philistines. So they tie him up, they bring him to the Philistines, and as they get close, the Philistines are cheering and shouting, and listen to what God did here. Judges 15, starting in verse 14, says, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully on Samson again. The ropes on his arms became like burned ropes, and the bindings, they just fell from his hands. And then he found a jawbone of a dead donkey, freshly dead, rips it out with the teeth in it and everything, and strikes down 1,000 Philistine men. And you could say, well, listen, how can one guy armed with just a jawbone of a donkey defeat 1,000 fighting men? That just doesn't make any sense. And you're right. Nobody could defeat 1,000 fighting men with just the jawbone of a donkey. But when the Spirit of the Lord comes on him, there's nothing he can't do to accomplish God's purpose. That's the point. That's the point God's making to Israel. That's the point God's making to you and me. And you'd think Judah would get it when they saw this happen, but they didn't. They abandoned Samson and left him. And he almost died there at the end. But he cried out to God, and God gave him water and sustenance, and he lived. This all should have been a signal, though, to Israel. This was God saying, I have always empowered you to do what I call you to do. If you would just live for my purpose and stop settling for cheap peace, I will give you power to do what I've called you to do and get you out of this prison. But instead, they chose the prison. And then here's the damning conclusion of Judges chapter 15. Just a short little verse says it. Samson led Israel for 20 years in the days of the Philistines. In the days of the Philistines. These weren't supposed to be the days of the Philistines, but they were, because Israel gave up her purpose to get some peace. That peace became a prison, and they were powerless to get out of it. And so those were the days of the Philistines. What days are you living in right now? Are they the days of God's power and presence in your life? Or are they the days of something else? That's not the end of Samson's story. We haven't reached the most famous part yet, the love affair with Delilah. So I want to cover that real quick before we get into ourselves. We often remember this story of Samson and Delilah, that it's like Delilah found Samson's kryptonite. She figured out the secret to his strength. It was his hair. Just cut his hair and then his strength will go away. But look, that's not really what's happened here. So let me tell the story. Some of you don't know it. Samson falls in love with this woman named Delilah, but she didn't love him. She loved money. And so she agreed with the Philistines that for an incredible amount of money, they offered her enough money to last her several lifetimes, as long as she agreed to figure out the secret to Samson's strength. And so she flirts and she seduces, and he loves her, but he toys with her and he doesn't tell her the truth. He tells her, oh, if you tie me up with bowstrings, then I won't be able to break them. And so she ties him up with bowstrings, and the Philistines come running, and he just snaps them like they're nothing and beats up the Philistines. And then he's like, no, okay, I was joking. I was kidding. And she's like, yeah, you got to tell me the truth. Don't you love me? And he's like, yeah, if you tie me up with new ropes, then I won't be able to break them. That's the secret. It's just got to be new rope. And so she ties him up with new rope. Philistines come around the corner, snaps it, beats up the Philistines. And then she's like, I can't believe you're doing this to me. You're making me so embarrassed. What's the secret? And so he says, okay. And now he gets closer to home. He's like, if you take my hair and weave it into your loom, then I'm powerless. Like, that's the most creative lie I've ever heard. But anyway, he falls asleep. She weaves his hair into her loom. Oh no, Samson, the Philistines are here. And he just gets up, smashes the loom, beats up the Philistines. And now she's distraught. She's like, you said you loved me. You said you care about me. And the Bible says she nagged him and nagged him and nagged him and nagged him for days and days and days and days until Samson got sick of it and just wanted a little peace. And so he told her, I was born into this Nazarite vow, and so a razor's never touched my head. If a razor touched my head at this point, I would lose all my strength. And so, you know what she does. She cuts his hair and yells out, the Philistines are here. And Samson gets up and thinks he's just going to go smack him around again. Doesn't realize the strength of the Lord has departed him. There is no And the Spirit of the Lord powerfully clothed Samson in this passage, in this part. He goes out ready to fight. Can you imagine his horror when they knock him down and hold him down and gouge out his eyes and drag him into prison? And him wondering, what happened? See, the source of Samson's strength was never his hair. Every time Samson did something supernaturally powerful, it was because the Spirit of the Lord empowered him to do it. Because Samson was serving and living for God's purpose in those moments. When Samson was committed to God's purpose and serving God's purpose to drive out the Philistines, the Spirit of the Lord gave him power to do that very thing. But what's he doing here? He's abandoning his purpose. Israel turned their back on him, so he runs into the arms of yet another woman, and he just wants some peace. More than he wants to fulfill God's purpose, he just wants peace with Delilah. And letting her shave his head was just the last step. Remember, he'd already been throwing drinking parties, he's already touched the dead animal. This is just the last step of him saying, you know what, this vow doesn't mean anything to me anymore. I'd rather have peace with this woman than peace with God. Samson lost God's power because he abandoned God's purpose in pursuit of a cheap peace that could never last. When you give up your purpose to get peace, that peace becomes a prison. You're powerless to escape. Now, we want to apply it to ourselves, but before we can, we got to zoom out a little bit more again and see the big picture of this story and of what's happening here. Before we can think about ourselves, we need to see the cosmic scale of all this, because this isn't about just us, right, and sin. This us and the things God wants us to drive out of our lives, the purpose God has for each of us. This is about God and everyone who sets himself up against God, right? So, Judges 16:23 says, "Now the rulers of the Philistines assembled to offer this a huge, great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and celebrate, saying, 'Our God has delivered us from Samson, the enemy, our enemy, into our hands.' And when the people saw Samson, they praised their god, saying," and this is actually a song they made up there, "'Our God has delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who laid waste our land and multiplied our slain.'" Bad lyrics, but whatever. That's their song that they're running around, dancing around, singing. "Look how powerful our God is. Look what he's done for us. He has saved us from Samson and from Samson's God." This is a battle between God and this false god, Dagon. The Philistines are convinced that their created God, the God they created, is more powerful than the creator God, because Israel abandoned her purpose. And Samson gave up on his purpose. And because they did that, the world is more confused about who God truly is. And that truth needs to be demonstrated and needs to be made known. God's going to make it known no matter what. Are we going to be part of it because we love God? Or is God going to have to work around our sin to make it happen? God's purpose for Samson, his purpose for Israel and for us, is to demonstrate that he is the one true God and reveal to people what he is truly like in all his holy justice and his power and his mercy and his love and grace. So here's, watch what God does. I'm going to read it to you. "While they were in high spirits, they shouted, 'Bring out Samson to entertain us.'" I don't know what they had him do, but they brought him out to entertain them. "So they called Samson out of the prison and he performed for them. And when they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, 'Put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple so I can lean against them.' And now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there. And on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, 'Sovereign Lord, remember me. Please, God, strengthen me just once more. And let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes.' Then Samson reached toward the two central pillars on which the temple stood. Bracing himself against them, the right hand on the one and his left hand on the other, Samson said, 'Let me die with the Philistines.' And then he pushed with all his might. And down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than when he lived." You might have noticed in all of this how similar Samson's story feels to Jesus' story. Even though Samson is no hero, Samson is in many ways a scoundrel, Samson is in many ways a failure. Not someone to emulate, because he abandoned his purpose for a cheap peace that became literally a prison. But Samson cried out to God, and God saved. But in Samson's victory, you see him give his life to gain that victory over evil, over sin, over the enemy of God's people. And so the story's parallel, a miraculous birth, supernatural ability, winning by dying, but that's where it all ends, because Samson's life was a tragedy. Jesus never forsook his purpose. Jesus was offered shortcuts to peace. Go read about his temptation in the wilderness and about, you know, Jesus, why don't you take the shortcut? Just, you know, bow to me and everything will have peace. You don't have to go through this, Jesus. You don't have to go through what you're going to go through in order to make things right. I can give you peace right here and now. But Jesus doesn't abandon his purpose. He presses all the way through, even though it costs him everything. Because Jesus knew that cheap peace in the end turns into a prison. And in death, what Jesus did was rescue us from the real enemy all along. The real enemy wasn't the Philistines, it was the sin that kept driving Israel away from God to all these other fake, false gods. It's the sin that kept making Israel abandon their purpose. It was sin that made Samson abandon his purpose. He'd rather have peace with this woman, right, than peace with God. It's sin that gets in the way. Jesus fought that battle and won it. Jesus did that. So look, we're not Samson. Don't confuse that when you read the story and think, oh, I'm supposed to be Samson. No, Jesus did what Samson failed to do, what every human has failed to do, in spite of God giving them power. Jesus came and did. He overcame sin. He overcame the enemy of God's people. He conquered sin and death. But then do you know what Jesus did after that? Do you remember what Jesus did after that? He rose from the dead. And then what did he do? He sent the Holy Spirit. Why? He said, you will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you, clothes you. Power to do what? To go out into this world and just tell people about Jesus and who he is and what he's done. That's what Jesus did. He gave us a purpose and he gave us a power to achieve that purpose with. That's what he's given us. There's a philanthropist named John Shedd who once said, a ship in harbor is safe, but that is not what ships are built for. You and I have been empowered for a purpose. That purpose is not to get together in church only and sing some songs on Sunday mornings. This is part of our purpose, to worship and magnify God, to hear his word and be challenged by his word, that God can talk to each one of us in a dialogue right now where your mind is thinking as you're hearing this story, okay, God, how does that apply to me? What does that mean for my life? And God can speak to you, and then you can tell him, yeah, but God, that's difficult. I don't know if I can do it because I really like having peace. And God can say, the peace you're settling for is garbage compared to the peace I have for you. It will not last compared to the peace I have for you. But you don't get that peace until you push through and live my purpose out. But don't worry. Yeah, you don't have the strength to live out my purpose. But I will give you all the strength you will ever need to live out my purpose. We've been empowered. And that purpose is to live lives that radiate Jesus into this world, that shine Jesus into this world and show people who he is, what real godliness is, what real love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. These are all the things that you and I can shine into this world. That's the purpose he saved us for. But when we let go of that purpose, which we're tempted to do every day, because living out that purpose is not easy. Living out that purpose is difficult. It's a struggle. And every day we're tempted to abandon that purpose to get some peace. You know, if I say something to that friend of mine, then they're going to think this about me, and then they're going to tell that person about it, and it's just going to get in the way of our friendships, and it's going to ruin the peace I've got going. If I say something about Jesus to that coworker who I know is going through a hard time, and if I, even if I just say I'm going to pray for them, I know they're going to then say something about it, and then I'm going to tell somebody else, and it's going to become a whole thing, and then I'll go to work and I'll have no peace at work. What are you chasing? Are you chasing a cheap peace? Or are you chasing the purpose God called you for? Or, you know, I don't have the strength to go and talk to that person about Jesus. I don't have the strength to go and love that person or care for that person, right? I don't have the strength to do that. And so I'm just going to settle here because that would be too difficult. Jesus is saying, I will give you all the strength you need. He even will bring people to your border, to your door, into your life, just to make it so obvious, hey, here's a person I want you to shine into. And you and I in those moments can either just kind of put our head down and walk away from that because we'd rather keep peace and not disturb our lives, or we can rise up to the purpose he called us for and experience his power for that purpose. And we try not to let our choices stir up too much attention. We try to cover up things. And what are you doing this weekend? Oh, you know, I got chores around the house. You're not going to mention I'm going to church or invite them with you? Why? Besides that, there's all the other things you and I chase after for peace. Right? Moments will come. God will bring you to a place of crisis. And you'll decide between God's purpose and peace that you get from something else. And then you'll find that that peace that you choose becomes a prison. And there are obvious ones here. Some of you know the prison of alcohol. Some of you know the prison of drugs. Some of you know the prison of food, right? The prison of having to work like crazy because you want to earn money and have more and more money. Some of you know the prison of always trying to be more physically fit or more attractive, right? Keep up the appearance. There's so many ways you and I can be imprisoned by things that we look to for peace. And you got to figure it out, what's in your life? What are you looking to in your life for peace that's becoming a prison that you're powerless to get out of because you're choosing that thing over the purpose God's called you for, that Jesus died to give you, that Jesus died so that you could have the Spirit empower you for? The peace you win by abandoning your purpose will become a prison that you will be powerless to escape. But remember what Jesus did. If you're in that place today, if you're in that place today and Philistines are ruling your life, remember what Jesus did. He set you free. You don't have to make that happen. Jesus already did. You just have to do what Israel didn't do. Cry out to God and say, Jesus, set me free from this and save me and bring me healing and make me a part of your purpose in this world. When we cry out to God, the comfort we have is he will give us all the power we need to fulfill that purpose. Worship team, would you come back? Ask yourselves this morning, take out that connect card, that bulletin, and ask yourself, where am I settling for a cheap peace? You know, who are the Philistines that are ruling over my life because I've embraced and I've made peace with that? That's just the way I'm going to be. That's just the way it's going to be. And it's too hard to go and live for God's purpose. Because if I try and live for God's purpose, that's going to cause trouble in my life. And listen, I guarantee you it will. Living for God's purpose is not an easy thing to do. And there'll be many times when, yes, you will not be able to do it. You need the power of the Holy Spirit to come on you. The great thing is Jesus has already done all that's necessary. If you and I will just say, Jesus, please rescue me from this prison. Jesus, please give me your power to live for your purpose. He will pour out his Spirit on you and transform you. Would you stand with me? Some of you maybe have already been praying, God, please fill me with your Spirit, fill me with your Spirit, fill me with your Spirit. But you haven't connected the purpose to it. God doesn't fill us with his Spirit just for kicks, just so we can have an experience around an altar time. God fills us with the Spirit for a purpose. And so this morning, I want you, there's two things you can write on that card. Ushers, you can come to the front while they're writing. You can get your offering ready in the envelope or however you're giving. One is, okay, what's the prison that you need to be set free from? That thing you've been looking to for peace that in the end, it will not bring you a lasting peace. I don't care how much money you have. One day you'll be broke. You may love your career. One day it will end and you'll have to retire, right? No matter what goes on, all those things are going to end. Their peace will run out. The only peace that lasts is the peace God gives you. And that peace comes from living for his purpose. And he'll give you the power you need for that. So what's the thing? What's the peace you're settling for? Is it peace with your family? Peace with your parents? Peace with your kids? Peace with your spouse? I'd rather have that than really live out God's purpose. What is it you're settling for? And then the second thing is, okay, God, I want to live for your purpose. And when you do that, if you make that commitment and you're genuine, God, I want to live for your purpose. The next thing to pray as we're singing these songs in worship is, God, fill me with your spirit. Fill me with your spirit. I want to live a purposeful life. I want to live for a real purpose that brings real peace, not just into my life, but into this world. God, give me a purposeful life. And as we sing these songs, let's embrace God's purpose and embrace all he is and what he's done. Father, as we give this morning, I pray, as we make these commitments and drop them in the...